104.3 FM University Radio Network presents The Good Morning Wake-Up Show, a radio show for the English-speaking community in Puerto Vallarta and Banderas Bay, with your host, Michael Nolan. Welcome.
Come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside. The show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rest assured, you'll get your money's worth. Wages show. It happened at our end. You gotta see the show. It's a dynamo. You gotta see the show. It's rock and roll.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Good Morning Wake-Up Show with your host, Michael Nolan, here on University of Guadalajara Radio, 104.3 FM. Today is September 9th, 2017. There's a lot going on, and the first thing I want to talk about is the Brigada, which if you listen to the show, you know a little bit about it, but it is a program where the University of Guadalajara here in Puerto Vallarta cook. The students go out, they select a certain community or neighborhood about once a month, and they take about 40 or 50 students and about 25 faculty and staff members here of the university. We go to a certain neighborhood, and we try and have a sit-down meeting with the whole community. And we bring doctors, lawyers, medical people, nurses, physical therapists, health education type people, nutritionists. We also bring some architects, some construction people, some lawyers. So it's basically everything you need to know about your life but may not know the answers to. And the university's professional staff will try and help you. And today, the particular Brigada, which is starting here at 9 o'clock, going till 2 o'clock, is in an area of town that is really, really close to Fidel Vasquez, the street, and the Plaza Inovita. There's a church right there. Where it is, it's about two blocks to the south of the big Micro Plaza Puerto Vallarta Shopping Center. I would say it's about a half a mile to the south and east of the Costco. So everybody in the world knows where Costco is here in Puerto Vallarta. If you go about 2.5 blocks past Costco towards the mountain, you'll turn left on Francisco Villa, and it turns into Avi Camacho, basically. And there's a big Micro Plaza mall, and the plaza that we're talking about is just about a block and a half to the south of it. They should be there about now. I know they were leaving the campus when I got here at 7 o'clock, and there's a church right there. It's Church San Jose Obispo Infidat School and Church. So if you have any questions of exactly where it's at, you can call me here at the radio station, and I can kind of point it out on a map. The number is 226-2233 or 226-2266, and I'll be glad to give you the information where it's at. But if you're over in that area of town today till 2 o'clock, please stop by, meet the representatives of the universities, ask any question you want. They can answer it, I'm sure. If not, they'll call me, and I'll have an answer for you. I was talking to someone the other day, and they said, "What's your opinion about that, Michael?" I said, well, I don't have opinions. I just have facts and answers. I don't think they like that too much, but, you know, that's how I am. Hey, if you'd like to contact me personally, you can do so at 104.3 FM, The Wake Up Show. And it is 104.3 Wake Up Show at gmail.com. Again, 104.3 Wake Up Show at gmail.com. Also, if you'd like to go back and listen to some of the old shows, you're more than happy to do that. You can go to www.viarta.podcastudg.com. Again, www.viarta.podcastudg.com. And again, if you have any questions, you can call me at 226-2233 or 226-2266 here at the radio station. Or you can email me at 104.3wakeupshow@gmail.com. If you know anybody that might be a really interesting guest for the show that has some really good information, if you're a charity or an organization that has a big event coming up in the next 2 or 3 weeks, please contact me. I'd love to have you on the show. I'd love to interview you and let you get your information out to the listening public. Again, I want to remind you that the Brigada has started, or Brigade, and it is in the Mall Plaza, just about 2 blocks behind the Plaza, Micro Plaza, Puerto Vallarta Mall. There's a big Walmart over there and a Bancomer and a little bit of everything. It's a real nice mall. I was over there the other day to go to a movie, and I'll tell you what, I didn't even know that thing was over there until I went. But, again, the Brigada has started. Please go over to it and let the students and faculty and staff help you out a little bit. What else is going on here at the university? Well, I've got to say congratulations to Dr. Marco Antonio Cortez and the staff. They have now been accredited. The medical college is, if you read my article each week in the Vallarta Tribune, and I want to say thank you very much to the Vallarta Tribune, which is an English-speaking newspaper that comes out every Thursday, and you can find it all over town. But they allow me to write an article each week called Que Paso at the UDGCUC, or What's Happening Here at the University. And I wrote a little bit about this for next week's edition, so next week you'll be able to find out about it. But a couple weeks ago I showed a photograph of 4 students and about 25 other students that have all graduated from the bachelor's degree in doctor, being a surgeon. And it is a degree that we've had here. Dr. Max Craig, when he was president of the university, I guess it's been about 7, 8 years ago, started this program. He was actually president for 3 years and helped get the medical school started here. But it has now been completely accredited by about 25 different organizations in the country of Mexico and around the world. And the people that graduate from that school are highly, highly recommended to be able to become doctors. And so I want to congratulate Dr. Marco Antonio Cortez and Dr. Max Craig for starting the medical school here, and congratulate to all the students that have graduated from it so far. We've had 1 graduating class, and there'll be many, many more in the future. So it'll be a great opportunity for a lot of graduate doctors to be staying maybe here in the Puerto Vallarta area and helping us here with all the things that matter medically. Hey, I also want to thank a bunch of the students. About a week ago, a group of about 45 students went around and they collected a whole bunch of food and went to different organizations, and they basically distributed it to a lot of the families up in the mountains and around the rivers that have been heavily affected by the heavy rains and floods. Believe it or not, there's a lot of homes up in the mountain area and around the River Qualley and the River Meca that were just completely washed away. And so a bunch of the students decided to go out and try and spread the spirit of social support, try to join forces with some of the other groups for the people that really, really needed it. As you all know, the hurricane season is in full blow. We had a special guest last week on the radio show from Houston, Texas, talking about everything that was going on there. And unbelievable damage. Unbelievable. I got to see a lot of photographs and talk to him and a couple of videos off YouTube. Over 650,000 cars were destroyed. Now, some of those will be able to be repaired. Some will be, you know, dried out and everything. But a lot of them were flooded. Just they're going to be totaled out. Also, millions of people were affected, either their companies, their place of business, their homes, families' homes. It was really, really sad. And unfortunately, Mother Nature, when she comes, she does whatever she wants to and just takes advantage of us. But we're on her earth, so we got to kind of live with it every now and then. And there's another huge hurricane headed towards Florida. So our prayers and thoughts are with all the people there in Florida, and hopefully they'll survive through this. Because of all the bad weather we've had here, well, I don't know if it's bad, it's beautiful weather, really, with a lot of the rain, but the River Omaha is just out of control. I drove by it a couple of days ago and went over, and I've never seen it so high in the 4 years I've lived here in the Puerto Vallarta area. It was way, way, way out of its banks, all the way across to the Vidanta property over in Nayarit, the other state that's on the north side of the river. So, anyway, please be careful if you're around that area. If you're a fisherman, stay away from that place. It'll wash you away. Again, I want to remind everybody that Bergata is going on right now, and please take time to go over and visit it. We're going to take a break. Please go get your pencil and your paper or some pens or your markers or whatever you like to write down with, because we have three really, really interesting interviews today. A couple of them are cultural, and the third one was about a project we had here at the campus this week. If you weren't able to attend, I'm sorry, but if you'll read my articles in the Vallarta Tribune, I try and advise everybody what's going to go on here for the next week or two in advance. And so please get your pencil and paper. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with some more interviews, and you'll be able to learn something. Thank you for listening in. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to the Good Morning Wake-Up Show with your host, Michael Nolan, here on University of Guadalajara Radio 104.3. I'm very fortunate today to have a special guest on the show. Many, many of you know her voice because she has her own very good show every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, and it's Rebecca Santiago. Welcome, Becca, to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
First, I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your show, because maybe some of my listeners here on Saturday morning aren't familiar with what all goes on here at the university as far as other types of shows. And you have a very special one that you have on every Tuesday night at 7. Tell us a little bit about that show, and then we'll talk about what we're going to talk about today.
Well, the show name is Parafarseando, and what we're trying to do in the show is to make interviews or make visible what has happened culturally in the Banderas Bay and Puerto Vallarta area.
Well, I know you always have a lot of great guests on your show, and it's always sometimes it's serious, but sometimes it's pretty funny.
Yeah, because we try to have like this part of irony.
Irony, you know, and or satire.
Satire, exactly.
With
the interviews. And, yeah. You know, for example, we think that nothing happens in Vallarta, in the cultural scene. But the real thing is that a lot of things are happening, but some of them are not visible. Mm-hmm. People don't know what is happening. We have cabaret, we have Jazz Foundation, we have stages, Act 3, Encantos, we have OPC, we have things that making at the library, at the Biblioteca Los Mangos. A lot of things happen. And what we try is to put it under the table and talk about what is happening.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's more activities here going on than most anybody realizes.
Exactly.
I mean, it's fabulous. And you can always, every night of the week, I don't care if it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Saturday, there's something going on here, and it's always great. And a lot of the entertainment is free. And a lot of the venues, like I know the Jazz Foundation, they have guests there come on from time to time. Like they had about four or five universities and high schools out of the United States several years ago bring their young jazz musicians down, and they had a free concert there one night. It was just fabulous. I think you were there. We had a good time.
Yes, exactly. Or the Salty Paw.
Salty Paw, the little kids.
Every
orchestra.
Sunday, I believe. And also we have cinema, we have literature, we have painting, sculpture, the Quali workshops. The University of Guadalajara is making a lot of cultural events that are also very, very important and are free, as you say.
That's true. Well, I know that I was leaving here a couple of weeks ago to go to the States, and there was a young mariachi band playing at the airport just for tips. But everybody was stopping and listening to them. They're really impressed. Well, thank you very much for coming. Your show is very, very fun, and I encourage all of my listeners to tune in every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock for Rebecca's show. The reason I have Rebecca on here today, as everyone knows, next week at midnight on the 15th, starting the 16th, is Independence Day here in Mexico. And we all know it as a big fiesta and a lot of fun, and most people from the United States actually think Cinco de Mayo is the Independence Day for Mexico because of Corona and Don Julio and Dos Equis. They just really promote it huge. And that's actually a small war that was kind of independence from France. And the true independence was from Spain. And then we had the revolution and with Father Hidalgo. And that's what I want you to talk. I want you to kind of put the myth on one side, what all of us gringos and a lot of people think, and what the real true meaning of Independence Day is here in Mexico.
Well, Independence, it's like you said, the night of the 15th of September, then when the current president of Mexico, make what we call the grito, no?
Enrique Peña Nieto.
In this case, no? We'll give the grito, which is what the Father Hidalgo make on that night of the 15th, entering the 16th. No?
And what year was that when Father Hidalgo did it? And you call him Father Hidalgo because he's like kind of George Washington. They call him the father of the country.
No, he has a priest. He was a priest.
Father. Okay, no, so he was like Monsignor or Bishop
exactly,
Hidalgo. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, we call him Father George Washington because he was
the father of the country. No, the father is, he was a priest.
He was a priest. I didn't
know
that.
And we call, in Spanish, we say El Padre. To the priest.
Exactly. So, I've already learned something, and probably 99.8% of my listening audience did, too.
No, it was 1810.
1810.
Uh-huh. 1810, 1810.
Okay.
Okay. So what happened before this in Mexico? We were a colony, like United States was a colony of England. We were a colony of Spain. But with a difference with you, we were a colony where the people, the native people here, still live here in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That means that we have a lot of brood in the bloods, no? We are like mestizos. We have Negroes as well. We have Sambos. We have a lot of bloods mixing here. In the States, well, the Native Americans, Native North Americans,
the indigenous people, uh-huh, we were pretty pure.
Yes, exactly.
In different tribes and in different parts of the country.
They were like, they're all almost dead, everybody, you know? Only few were survivors.
Yeah, thanks to Andrew Jackson, the president, mm-hmm, that tried to kill all the Americans.
Exactly.
After he stole all their land and everything. And me, being part Native American, I understand the history, and I'm really glad they're taking him off the $20 bill, because most Native Americans, especially half and full bloods, will not touch a $20 bill.
Yeah.
Because they don't like Andrew Jackson and what he did to the Native Americans.
So we try to, what we have is to be independent of this colony,
mm-hmm,
the Spanish colony. And we still think to our days that we have a colonial mind. And that is very important because you will Maybe you say, well, we also been a colony, United States. Why you don't have a colonial mind?
Mm.
Because you were never like a colony like us.
That's true.
Because our blood was mixed, you know. The people that have Indian blood, like me, then we'll always see a white Spanish people on top. No? So that's what we try about to be in the independence. But the independence didn't take over because of the mestizos or of the real Mexicans, of this mixing of blood. Was the criollos. The criollos was the Spanish people that were married to another, let's say, a Spanish man, married to a Spanish lady,
mm-hmm.
but living here in Mexico and have a Spanish son born in Mexico.
Okay.
This second generation of Spanish people that were born in Mexico were the criollos. And these criollos don't have the same rights as the pure Spanish born in Spain.
Okay.
So that's why they make the independence.
Because they were mad because they weren't getting a fair shake.
Exactly.
Okay.
They have different treatments. And also they were more educated. So they know what was happening in France. They know about what's happening in the rest of the world. And they want to have the same rights. Not to serve the crown of the Spanish king.
And we had the same thing in the United States. We were trying to get away from the English crown, and it happened that it was also over religious purposes. Now, you're saying Father Hidalgo is a priest. I'm assuming he was a Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm, a Catholic
and,
priest.
But the church really, was the church that much involved in the revolution to
independence?
Independence. Mm-hmm. But it was a revolution to win independence,
uh-huh.
correct?
Yes.
They did have a little fight.
Yes, yes.
All through Mexico.
Yes, but we call revolution to the what happened 100 years later.
Okay.
The Mexican Revolution. This
okay.
we call the War of Independence.
All right.
We didn't call it a revolution.
Well, you're teaching everybody a lot, I'm sure. And I'm glad, and I thank you for coming, because a lot of us just don't understand. And we're living here. We have our residencies here. We need to know the history and culture.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we've come to the university and taken a SWAM program in history of Mexican history, we're not learning it, so you're here to teach us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
But, well, Michael, as I was saying, no, like I was telling to you, this, what happened also, it's very important that you say about the religious thing, because we have a conquest that was also religious.
Okay.
No, in your case, for example, English people were Protestants mostly.
That's
no?
true.
Maybe you have Irish that were Catholic that come to the part, the United States, and you have these mixings between Protestants and Catholics. But also maybe in a balance, or maybe more the Protestants than
mm-hmm.
the Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
In Mexico, the Spanish people have a very specific and very characteristic concept of God. There's a book that's called The Other Spanish Christ, very passional. If you go to Spain, for example, in the what we call Semana Santa, the
mm-hmm.
Holy Week, you will see of these processions
yes.
of the Virgin, you know, and the crying and the tears. And this kind of God, of Christian God, of Spanish God, was the one that conquered on top of the Aztecs goddess and gods. So that is very important, because we as mixing, as mestizos,
mm-hmm.
we have the both concept, the pre-Hispanic concept and also the Christian concept, blend together, like you put it in a shake and then you make a special shake. So also the independence, yes, like to answering your question, the religion plays a very important part in the independence. That's why it's so important that a priest was the one who made the calling, o el grito, to gather together and start saying, let's go to change this thing.
And the president of Mexico every year at midnight on the 15th reads the proclamation, or I might not be wording it right, of Father Hidalgo, and everybody yells Viva Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and he yells Viva, and they go through quite a few things. It's always in Spanish, and I don't understand those, what they're saying. Can you?
You understand what Viva means?
Yes,
Viva
life.
Is life, long
but,
live.
Long live, but he says several things, and he said, and then, what exactly does a proclamation, or am I asking you something off guard?
Uh-huh.
Do you know what the proclamation actually says?
What the priest said,
yeah,
was a gathering.
Said. Okay.
No, he said, let's come. He rang the bell,
mm-hmm.
like when you're calling to Mass.
Mm-hmm.
He rings the bell so people can come to the place. And then he start gathering the people in order to go to war. But what the president now said is, long live the heroes that gave us our country.
The freedom. And he names quite a few different people.
And he named all the people of the Father Hidalgo, the heroes, the heroines, everybody he was. And after he named all the people that were considered heroes, we say, long live this, long live. That's why, Viva Mexico. Until the end, then he say, long live Mexico, three times. Long live Mexico, long live Mexico.
And if I'm not mistaken, in Mexico City, there is a huge, huge monument that a lot of these people are buried at. And I don't know exactly. I don't know if it's the big one with the angel up on top.
That's the Independence. Independence Monument. Yes.
Also in Tacatejas. Now, was that also, that's a town that I was at a couple of years ago, and there's a huge, well, a big hill with three huge figures on horses. And like one was Zapata, and I don't know who the other two men are, but they were part of, was that the revolution?
That was the revolution.
That was the revolution.
That's a different war, and also the people that start brewing that war were different.
Okay.
Were different interests, and maybe if you want, we can talk later about what.
But when we get up to that time of the year, we'll talk about that. Yeah, November, we'll talk about that. Okay. We're going to have to take a break right now, Rebecca. We'll be right back with more of the Good Morning Wake-Up Show here in just a minute.
Thank you.
Let's have a little talk at the Good Morning Wake-Up Show.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Good Morning Wake-Up Show with your host, Michael Nolan, here on University of Guadalajara Radio. Once again, we're going to continue our conversation with Rebecca Santiago. We are talking about Independence Day, which is coming up starting at midnight on the 15th, and we'll continue all day on the 16th, and maybe some on to the 17th. Who knows?
No, only to the 16th.
Yeah, I know, but sometimes those parties, those fiestas, celebrations kind of, you know, if, especially if it's on a holiday or a weekend.
And before you ask me about the protocol, what the president said in this, so I'm going to read it in English, in Spanish, and try to translate it to English, okay?
Thank you very much.
We say first, Mexicanos, Mexicans, viva los héroes que nos dieron patria, long live the heroes that gave us our country, viva Hidalgo, long live Hidalgo, viva Morelos, long live Morelos, viva Josefa Ortiz de Domínguez, long live Josefa Ortiz de Domínguez, viva Allende, long live Allende. Viva Aldama y Matamoros, long live Aldama y Matamoros. Viva la Independencia Nacional, long live the National Independence. Viva México, long live Mexico. Viva México,
viva long live Mexico.
Viva México.
Tres tiempos.
Tres tiempos.
And then he rings a big, big bell.
Yes, exactly. Which is the symbol of the Dolores.
Okay.
Hidalgo.
The church.
The church and, and the bell calling to mass, like asking everybody to join and to be together in this celebration. And then everybody parties.
and everybody parties because you're celebrating your celebration. And there are many, many fireworks displays.
Yes.
And now this all happened many, many years ago. And I guess throughout Mexico, there were small celebrations, but nothing like today because of social media, because of television, because of internet. It just seems like everywhere I go in Mexico, there is mass communication. There's cell phones. There's computers. There's internet cafes. And I guess because of all of this, even the smallest, tiniest village in the most remote part of Mexico, up in the mountains of Oaxaca or Chiapas or wherever, they know about it. Maybe 50 years ago, 40 years ago, nobody knew about it because it was just another day to get up and go work and do that. But now they do celebrate. Everybody, I think, participates, which is great.
And every remember our political, how to say, the way we are political made, established in Mexico, every little city have the Palacio Municipal, the National
Plaza,
you know, the plaza, the where the power
the
is.
The plaza of the government.
The government.
Basically.
So in every little town, they have the celebration of the grito, el grito de la independencia. The proclamation of the independence.
Well, that's what I'm saying so great about Mexico, because every little town, like you said, every little village, they all had their city square.
Exactly.
And it's where a lot of people gather, especially on important dates. And as I mentioned, this is going to be a big, big, important date for Mexico. It always is every year. And I want to say thank you, Rebecca, for coming in a little bit and explaining it, making it a little bit clearer to us gringos. And
celebrate with us.
Oh, I'll be celebrating.
Celebrate with us.
I remember several years ago, because of some important people I knew in Houston, I would get invited to the Mexican consulate every year. And it was just a fabulous, fabulous party. And a lot of the best restaurants in Houston that were Mexican would bring some unbelievable food. And that happens here, too.
Yes.
I mean, there's great, great food. That's my favorite thing about it.
And it's very easy because every time they say Viva Mexico, you just answer Viva.
Viva.
You know? Every time they say Viva something, Viva Allende, Viva Hidalgo, you just answer Viva.
Well, we'll do that. Okay. So, Rebecca, again, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Michael.
Educating us here at the Good Morning Wake Up Show. We're going to take another break. We'll be right back.
The Good Morning Wake Up Show will be back in a few minutes.
Welcome back to the Good Morning Wake Up Show with your host, Michael Nolan, here on the University of Guadalajara Radio, 104.3 FM. Once again, I want to say thank you very much for listening in this morning. Today, I have one of the most creative and inspirational people I think I've had on the show since I've started it over 2.5 years ago. And this young lady, as well as her team of co-workers, have just done some amazing project here in the Bay of Banderas area. Public and private. First of all, let me introduce her. Her name is Natalia.
Natasha.
And I don't even know your last name.
Moraga.
Moraga. And today she brought one of her co-workers and brother, Daniel.
Daniel Moraga.
Daniel.
Sí, señor.
I'd like to say thank you very much for taking your time to come here and visit.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Nat, as I call her, because she told me I could, is a muralist,
yes,
an artist, a creativity person. She is best known for, in my eyes, because it's probably the largest project, is a long, long wall that is down by the School of the Americas over around the Marina Project,
yeah,
by the Marina. It's probably
500 square meters.
500 square meters, about a quarter of a kilometer long.
Half.
Half a kilometer, even longer.
Yeah.
And it's mosaic tiles, and it's one of the most beautiful works of art, you know, that I've seen here in this town, period. She also is the person that did, along with her team, the large Puerta Vallarta letters. When you're coming in from Nayarit and you cross the bridge, you'll see some giant, giant letters that say Puerta Vallarta. Her and her crew did that.
Yes.
And that is just an unbelievable work of art.
Thank you.
I've also seen some private homes that you've done. Some very, very beautiful works of art. And like I said, it's very inspirational. She's a treasure to the Puerto Vallarta area. That's how I see you.
Thank you very much.
The work she does is going to last for years and years and years.
Yes.
Tiles, mosaic, it's glass, it's ceramic, it's other things. But they can last for hundreds of years, if not thousands.
Yes.
and hopefully we'll have many, many more of her works here in the Bay of Banderas area. And we're very proud to welcome her as a daughter of Puerto Vallarta.
Thank you. That's very nice.
She has embarked on a major new project, and it is going to make one of what I think is the most beautiful plaza here in Puerto Vallarta even way more beautiful. It, when her dream comes true, and we're all going to be blessed by it. And so I'm going to ask her to explain the project. I think it's in conjunction with the celebration of the 100th anniversary of Puerto Vallarta. And if you don't mind that, if you'll just kind of explain the project, how it came about. I gave a little bio of you, if you'd like to give a little bit more about where you're actually from. I don't know if you're a Salty Foot or not.
I feel like a salty foot, yeah. Yeah. I've been here 18 years, so.
Well, and you're about 19 years old, so that's pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, this new project, we're very excited. We're going to be remodeling and reshaping all the Lázaro Cárdenas Park, which we're calling now the Tile Park or El Parque de los Azulejos. And it's a big challenge. We're very excited. It's going to be one of our biggest projects.
Mm-hmm.
My brother Daniel and I are going to be directing and supervising the whole thing. We've worked together in the first wall we did in the kindergarten near Basilio Vadillo.
Yes, that's right, downtown. That's the very first project you did. How many years was that?
That's been six years, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when it all started.
Yeah.
And we had no clue we were going to come up with all this.
Well, you know, great work is rewarded.
Yeah. And, I mean, people are very accepting of it, especially in that area.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's more expats, and everyone just is very, very supportive. I mean, they pass by, they give us apples, and they take some water. It's just really fun. You get to meet lots of people and make people smile, which is really cool.
Well, your art does that. I mean, the concepts that you do, I mean, you have a wall, you're going to put tiles on it, but you come up with some really, really beautiful, beautiful designs. I encourage anybody, if you're ever, when you're out by the Puerto Vallarta Letters, there's a parking space there you can pull over by some of the shops. Walk over there and look at the detail in some of those letters. I mean, they're beautiful from a distance while you're driving by. But you need to actually stop, get out, look at each individual letter.
Exactly.
Look at the colors. Look at it from different angles, not just the one coming from the road.
Yeah.
Look at it from the back or the side, from the top, if you can get up on top and look up there.
Exactly. Everything's different, and they're all 3D, so.
Well, they are, and they're beautiful works of art, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the project, how it came about, who actually contacted you, and where the funding's coming from, and how, if the public can be involved, besides apples and waters.
Okay.
Things like that.
This project, actually, I've had it in my head for about 5 years, and I actually presented it three times. The third one was the good one.
The chalk.
Yeah, I'm pretty stubborn, so I guess in this case it helped me a lot.
Persistent.
Yeah.
Not stubborn.
No, you're stubborn also. Stubborn also.
Okay.
So this last time, it was like a month ago, and we introduced the project to like the city and everyone, and they actually said, okay, we're interested. They're interested because we didn't ask for any money, which is, it's okay. It's better. That way we're completely responsible for the designs and whatever happens in the park. And I think that's a good thing. If not, we would have to
go by their guidelines.
Exactly.
If they're paying for it, you know, it's like when you're going out to dinner with somebody, if they invite you out to dinner and they're going to pay for it, you go where they want to go and eat what
you got to.
Exactly.
It might be McDonald's. It might be a lobster and, you know, king Alaskan crab. But if they're paying for you, you know.
Exactly.
But that's good because it gives you more creativity and more of what you'd want, more control, I think, of the project.
Of course. And that was part of what we asked for. Like, we need to have control over the design because if people start getting involved, then it's not as fun. And yeah, I mean, we're very, very excited. People can participate because that's the way we have to gather funding.
Mm-hmm.
Our team is ready. We start actually Monday.
Okay.
We're going to...
Now, when you say they're not paying for it, but somebody is, these tiles don't come free. The adhesive doesn't come free. Your time doesn't come free.
Yeah.
People are paying for it.
Yes.
And is it it's private donations, not public sector.
Yeah.
And can you talk about some of the sponsors, or do you have the sponsors lined up already?
We have a few
already.
The first one that actually helped us to start was Hotel Emperador. And with Linay Cornejo, she was the first one that said, okay, I'm in. And we're very, very thankful.
To an expat gringo from Oklahoma, who exactly is she? I don't know her.
She's the owner of Hotel Emperador.
Okay.
Yeah, and a very active, very important activist in town.
Okay.
What we're doing is actually the same as we've done in every wall we've done. People can participate buying a tile, and it's customized. So you can actually put whatever you want, your name or your pet or in memory of someone. There's only a few spaces available because we don't want to ruin the design with a whole bunch of publicity and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, businesses were controlling a lot the logos because we want to give it more a community feeling, but more a personal.
Yes.
I mean, all the stories that will come together in that park are going to be awesome and very important. They're going to have a meaning, and that only will make the park even more special.
And it'll be organizations, groups, people that have helped build this community.
Exactly.
And they will have a remembrance in the community because their tile will stay in place
for
many, many, many years.
Yeah.
So,
and a big
one saying the Good Morning Wake Up Show loves Nat. That'd be a nice one or something like that.
That'll be nice. But yes, I mean, and, I couldn't have done this by myself, so mm-hmm. that's why I talked to my brother. I said, look, everyone loves what you do because we're very different in how we do things. He likes design tiles. I like only colored tiles. So when we combine it, it actually works. And our first wall was the one that people most talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I invited him, and I'm glad he agreed because he's a little weird.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, it's a family thing, I guess.
I know. I think it's an artistic thing. I don't know a single artist that's a serious artist that isn't a little bit walk on the wild side.
Yeah.
But that's great. That's what makes you... Well, I had an artist on here the other day, and he's a glass designer.
Mm-hmm.
A gentleman owns the Glass Factory. Very, very nice guy. And he actually said, art is something, it could be anything, but if it takes you out of where you're at, if it removes you from walking down the street or what you're thinking about, if it takes your mind completely off of what the world has dealt you that day, and you go and you revolve to another place because of that piece of art or whatever it is, that's when you can consider it art.
Exactly. It brings you, that's what I like about these walls and any type of art, it brings you to the present moment, which is the only one that really exists.
That's true.
I mean, usually in our head, we're somewhere else, future, past, or even like when you go to your house driving, there's some places you've lived there for a year and you don't know that, oh, the store was there forever. I mean, because you're always in your head. So yes, art provokes that. It brings you to the moment. It makes you be there and just look and realize what you're seeing. So.
And that's the great thing about it. Well, my producers tell me I need to take a break. We're going to do that, and then we'll come right back here in just a minute.
Excellent.
The stars, pull one down for you, shine it on my heart, so you could see the truth, and this love I have inside is everything it seems, but for now I change the world.
Welcome back to the Good Morning Wake Up Show. We're going to continue our conversation this morning with Nat and Daniel, her brother, who have embarked on a probably about a year-long project where they're going to completely change the look and complexion of the Plaza del Las Cardenas.
Lázaro Cárdenas.
Lázaro Cárdenas. That's the hardest thing for me to say here in the Bay Banderas. It was La Cruz La Juana Coxley. But I finally, after
it's,
6 months.
It's still
months,
hard for you.
Well, I'll tell the story again. I've told it 100 times. I go up there every Sunday or about every other Sunday to the flea market at La Cruz La Juana Coxley. And there's a young lady that comes down there from, I think, Compostela. Her and her husband, they grow peanuts. And they have peanut butter, peanut brittle, peanut butter cookies, peanut butter pie, peanut butter cream for your hair, peanut butter everything. So I go there basically to buy the peanut brittle because it's the best I've ever had. And so I started calling it La Cruz La Cacahuate, which is the Spanish word for peanut, La Cacahuate. Well, then the La Cruz amigos and some of my friends from La Cruz La Juana Coxley started saying, hey, you can't, you know, mess up the name of our town.
Exactly.
I said, well, okay. So I did. You know, I took some serious therapy and went to a couple of speech therapists up in Juan Cruz La Juana Coxley. And you know how it called, why it called, it's called that? Apparently, many, many years ago, some sailors were coming into the bay, and there's a large Juana Coxley tree that's there in town right by the marina, and they thought they saw a huge cross inside it. So they named the area of the bay there La Cruz La Juana Coxley.
Okay. Very interesting.
But I still can't say the plaza.
Lázaro Cárdenas.
Lázaro Cárdenas.
Yes.
By the end of your project in the year, I'll be able to say it perfectly, okay?
Perfect.
I'll make you a deal. Well, let's talk back. We talked about one of the sponsors. Are there some other major sponsors that you have?
We're working on that.
Okay, they're working on that. And you can be a, not a major sponsor, but you can be a minor sponsor, somebody like myself, and buy a plaque or a tile. And it can be different sizes?
Yeah, we have different sizes.
Okay.
Actually, we can, I think we should give the email out or the webpage. So
please
people
do. Let's go ahead and give the work out, the contact information for you and also the webpage.
Okay.
And if you would, just say it and say it kind of slow so people can write it down.
The webpage is www.tileparkpv.com or www.tileparkpv.com. ParqueAzulejosPV.com. I think the English one will work better on this program.
Yes, I think so, too.
And the email is nat@ParqueAzulejosPV.com.
Okay.
If you go into the webpage, you'll find it there. And there's, I mean, you can also be a major sponsor if you want. We have no problems with that.
Well, let's talk about the, if you know, what would differentiate a major sponsor versus a minor sponsor? $10,000 versus $100, something like that. Or what do the tiles start off at?
We have tiles for $100.
American dollars.
American dollars.
Which would be about 1,800 pesos today.
Yeah. And we
have. That'd be the beginning level.
That'd be the beginning level, and we have the business ones that go up to $700.
Okay. And then are the sizes?
There's specific sizes.
Okay.
We have. In centimeters, 15 by 15. There's a whole bunch. That's why I think it's a little complicated to give exactly all the sizes and options.
Mm-hmm.
But we have, like, memorial tiles. We have celebration tiles. We have pet tiles where we can actually hand-draw your pet on the tile and just with his name or whatever you want on it, right? And
uh-huh.
So there's different categories. We have all the park is sectioned. We're going to have, like, the memory section is going to be in front of the ocean. That way
okay. All
the spirits are free and going crazy in the sunset. And the celebrations one, there's another section. Everything's well planned in our heads. So,
and I'm sure it will come out very well planned. And I can't wait to come down and watch as you work on this project, and I'll bring you, you know, some water and apples. That's usually what I give to my horse. Maybe I'll upgrade you. I'll get you some Dom Perignon and maybe some escargot or something like that.
Yes.
You know, because you guys have been working hard. Now, do you need anybody that's a budding artist to kind of help you maybe mix paste or mix adhesive or the cutting of the tiles? I did a project like this one time on my driveway. It was just a small area. And I just went to Home Depot and bought about 20 old tiles and got some that were already chipped and broken. And then I just took a hammer, put them in a gunny bag and banged them up and then just started putting it together.
Yeah.
And it was kind of fun. But do you need anybody to break up the tiles or is that?
Well, we have a, this time we're working with a big team.
Okay.
We have someone that's specifically gonna, cut tiles. One's gonna break them. We're gonna, yeah, it's a team of about 8 or 10 people.
Oh, great.
We're also, one of the exciting parts is the beginning because we're gonna actually reshape all the, planters. They're all squared right now.
Uh-huh.
And we wanna give them a bit of movement and we have to change all that structure, right? And it's all going to be recycled material. So
oh,
we're talking
great.
Cans and PET bottles and so and tires. And so that's going to make it even more exciting, right?
Well, I've got about 100 bottles of wine, old wine bottles, if you need any of those. I didn't drink any of the wine. It just somehow at my house, with all the people that come over, just started collecting wine bottles.
And, well, yeah, everything works. We're not working with glass bottles a lot because people like to break them.
And they do cut.
And they cut. Uh-huh. So, I mean, this is just to make the structure. Everything is going to be covered. You're not really going to be able to see the bottles or the cans. Everything's going to be recovered with tiles. We're also planning on putting some sculptures inside the planters, like a big fish or camaleon or just fun elements here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean,
is there a theme to the project? I mean, you said there's going to be a memorial-type wall. There's going to be a musical-type wall or something to do with that, different themed areas. Is
yes.
there one total theme of,
course,
celebrating the 100th anniversary? I saw that.
Yeah, that was actually a coincidence that it's next year and the project is accepted. And for some reason, with the press and all, it came out like it's because of that. It's not really because of that, but fortunately,
it'll coincide.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there'll be lots of press and it'll actually be part of the celebration.
Well, that's fabulous. And I'm looking forward to getting a tile or two.
Excellent.
One personal and one maybe through the Good Morning Wake Up Show. And if any of my sponsors, I don't really have sponsors on the radio show, but I've had great, great, great companies come on here like Noamar Insurance, Intercom Bank, O'Connor and Associates, and I can go on and on and on. Andale's Restaurant, Jorge and Lombrano, and Trio's Restaurant. I mean, everybody can kind of get involved, but you have to get involved fast.
Yeah.
Because all the good tiles are going to be gone.
Yeah, we have a limited amount of tiles. There's like 50 per...
different size or different
shape? Exactly. Just total 300 for the whole park. And we don't want to go higher, so we can keep the design art.
This is art. It's not commercial. It's not a billboard.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, there are going to be logos for businesses.
Uh-huh.
But the idea is getting more personal tiles. I think it makes a difference.
And I think it'll be great to see my grandchildren, you know, in 100 years. Well, that'd be like my great-great-great-grandchildren. I got grandkids who are 14 already. It'd be great for them to come by and say, hey, there's that crazy old grandpa of ours.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, we've seen the effect in the other walls. People pass by and, oh, look, I know that person. Oh, that person's not here anymore.
Yeah.
Or just pets that are – that first wall we did, probably 70% of the tiles up there with names,
mm-hmm.
People are not here anymore. So
well,
it's meaningful.
It's a memorial to them
exactly.
in the future. Well, we're going to have to take another break. We're going to come back here in just a minute and talk a little bit more about the project, kind of wrap things up. But the producer's saying take a break, so we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more of the Good Morning Wake Up Show here in just a second.
You are listening to the Good Morning Wake Up Show.
I'm wild.
Welcome back to the Good Morning Wake Up Show. We're to continue our conversation with Daniel and Natalia, or Nat.
Natasha.
Natasha. That's Russian, isn't it?
Natasha is Russian, yes.
Yes.
My parents used to drink lots of vodka, I guess.
Well, I used to have a Russian girlfriend. Her name is Veronica.
Was she like me, tall, blonde?
Yeah, she's about 6 foot, blonde. She used to be an Olympic swimmer for the country of Russia. And if I talk much more about it, I'll probably hear about it from my wife when I get home.
I bet you will.
My little sweet, lovely PhD, Dr. Cecilia Soraya Sibia del Soto Del Nolan. I'm at the very end of this thing. But anyway, we won't talk about my Russian girlfriend, Veronica. Daniel, we're going to get you involved in that, and I've been talking a lot. Tell us about how long you worked with your sister. I guess you have for several years since you started the first project with her. And are you also an artist by trade? Do you do other kind of art? And what are you going to bring to this thing?
Okay.
That's 8 questions. You got to remember them all.
That's a lot of questions. Yeah, the first project I did with my sister was the kindergarten mural.
Yeah.
That was 2007, I believe it was.
2012.
Oh, 12. Okay, yeah, never mind that then. And yeah, I just like enjoying time, you know? I like to capture the moment. Mm-hmm. If I'm feeling happy, sad, that's what you're going to represent. So after that first project, you know, working with family is kind of a bit of a stressful. I remember throwing the keys at her one time, something like that.
That's so, not so bad. I threw a machete at my brother one time.
Oh, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't get that. I don't get that crazy.
Don't give him any ideas, please.
Luckily, I caught him on the little finger, and it just, you know, he used to be a 10, now he's a 9 3/4.
Yeah, luckily thing I had the keys on the time, okay. At my hand that time.
No.
So after that project, I stopped working, and I went to what I like doing, which is restaurant business.
Oh, really?
So I opened up a small coffee shop.
All right.
This is back in Bucerías. And this was 3 years ago already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working high season, closing low season. And at the meantime, I did small personal works.
Private
works.
Yeah.
Like tables, doors. And I like to take my time. I like a more... what do you call it?
Yeah, that's his excuse for being kind of slow.
Do you still have the coffee shop?
No, I had to close it.
Okay.
It's closed already.
Okay.
And luckily now I'm going to be working back with my sister.
Well, that's a great experience, though. I mean, working in a coffee shop, just with public. You know, you're going from working with public every day and having to put up with their. Now you're going to be more into yourself.
Exactly.
And you can be thanking but expressing your creative, you're letting all your creative juices flow.
Yeah, yeah. I still do that with my coffee shop, though. I don't feel like a restaurant. It feels like art.
Okay. You know? Well, that's cool.
And both the coffee shops, I had, you know, tile decoration that I keep doing because I like that work.
Well, it's beautiful and something that lasts forever. You know, I don't know if you've ever been to the Vatican in Rome.
Yes.
But most people think those are all paintings on all the walls and everything. They're not.
No, they're tiles.
They're all tiles. And I think they have the largest collection of colored tile in the world. I think I read one time there was over 10,000 shades of colors.
Well, it's Mosaico Bizantino, and they work with this. It's called Smalti,
mm-hmm.
which is this triple tempered glass. So it's like super, super hard. And yeah, you can get any shade you want of color. They're really cool.
Well, they're beautiful. But everybody thinks, oh, those are just a painting that Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo did. No, those are all tiles.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's incredible. And thank you for pointing that out because I'm the kind of guy, well, everybody knows who I am. I think I know a little bit about everything. I really don't know anything about anything. So I have people like you that are experts. And I appreciate that. Let's talk about Daniel, what are you gonna? You're doing more. She does more of this, the colors, and you do more
details.
Details.
Yeah, yeah. I like to take my time, really.
Okay,
but I do it fast. I do work fast.
We only have a year because
we only have a year.
I remember going to a deal down about 2 months ago. I sat at Murphy's Irish Pub. Thank you, John Murphy, for allowing me to come in and sit. It was the last night of the 99th anniversary of Puerto Vallarta, and they had a huge concert right down there in front of Murphy's Irish Pub. And just happened, the mayor of Puerto Vallarta just happened to be sitting over a couple tables from me, and he came over and talked and said hello, and he's such a great guy and is doing a really good job. But it was a great place to view the last night of the entertainment. And We got talking about the 100th anniversary, and I said, hey, well, this, the guy you have entertained tonight, he was some guy that played the accordion. I can't remember his name. Very good, famous, but he wasn't Mexican.
Okay.
And I said, next year for the 100th anniversary, we need to have some people like Arcano, the group here that lives here in Puerto Vallarta. That,
locals.
That a brother, a sister, and I two sisters and a brother that play music. We need to have Carlos Santana because he's from not too far away from here. Mana, Fernando has a house here in the Bay of Banderas area, Fair, as everybody calls him. So we need to get the local people involved. We don't need, you know, U2 or, you know, the Rolling Stones. It might be.
I wouldn't mind.
Wouldn't mind. They could be on the undercard, but the final nine, we need to have local because there are so many great, great local talents, not only musical, but artistic, and you two are part of that team. And I'm really excited about this. I can't wait to come down and watch as it progresses. And you do have a young lady here today that's a photographer. She's taking some pictures of the show, but she's also going to be documenting the step-by-step process.
Yes. She's going to be working with us through all year, documenting everything, videos, pictures, time-lapse, audios, everything. That way, at the end, we have... I mean, we can actually make a documentary
video,
or a video
of it, and people can watch maybe a time-lapse deal.
Exactly.
I had a friend there built a brand-new football stadium in Houston several years ago, and a friend of mine had an office about three blocks away from the construction site. He was on the 12th floor, and he basically took a picture every other day for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And you can just, and then he put it together in a little video deal, and you just kind of watch the stadium grow in about 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
Yeah, well, that's the idea.
And, you know, that's time-lapse photography. Is that what that's called?
Time-lapse, yes. Yeah. So that's going to be fun. I mean, it's very exciting. This project is very, it's very similar, but it's very different from all others. I mean, we already finished the Marina wall, the letters, everything. But this one, it actually involves much more. It's a main plaza. We're going to actually reconstruct and reshape everything. We've never done that, so we're very excited to learn as we go.
Well, it's going to be a great project. And again, let's give out your contact information where people can contact you if they're interested, and they should be because this is going to be in the heart of Puerto Vallarta. And as we well know, that area is really, really changing.
Yes.
Not only are you going to give the plaza a facelift, a lot of the older buildings are being torn down. They're building brand new 9, 8, 10-story condos. Some people are really, really happy about it. Then some people think it's destroying the old Puerto Vallarta.
Well, the good thing with this type of art is that it actually is Mexican. I mean, we go way back, even the materials, everything. So hopefully we can rescue a little bit of the essence of Old Town. Because, yeah, as you say, there's a whole bunch of buildings, like Miami-type buildings going up.
Yeah.
I miss my old town.
Well, I love the old town. I just I don't like the old streets. I'm having to get my second windshield because the cracks and the vibration, it just cracks your windshield.
Well, they're not changing the streets. They're changing the buildings.
No, I know that. I wish they'd change it. I wish they'd spill about 1 million gallons of concrete on the streets and let them flatten that out and make those things, you know. The cobblestones are beautiful, but
they don't work.
You know,
cars.
Let's keep them in Topeka. let's put at least maybe a foot, about every 8 inches or something like that, so you can have some smooth pavement.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad.
That's a different show.
That's a different show, exactly. So, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the project. Just wrap it up if you don't mind. People can get involved by contacting you at...
Yes. You can contact us at
tileparkpv.com.
Yes. Or, I mean, my phone number is 322-12-10199, and you can call me anytime before 10, please, because then my girlfriend gets angry.
Before 10 in the morning
or
before 10 at night?
Night, please.
Let's say between 4 and 4:30.
4 and 4:30, yeah. That sounds good.
Also, get out in Spanish, because we do have an awful lot of bilingual give it out in Spanish because we do have an awful lot of bilingual listeners.
In Spanish is www.parqueazulejospv.com.
Okay. And the project starts Monday?
We start Monday. That's the idea.
Is OSHA No, I guess Hoshi's not going to come.
I don't have no idea who that is.
In the United States, there's a governmental agency that monitors everything.
Oh,
and it's called OSHA.
I hope they're not coming.
And if they were here, you'd have to be wearing hard hats, you'd have to have safety glass, you'd have to have steel-toed boots, you'd have to have every area roped off for about a half a mile, and it'd be the biggest pain in your, you know what?
Yeah, no.
In the world. No. And that's why I live here, because of all the regulations and rules you have to abide by in the United States. It's just not much fun.
Exactly. That's why I opened my coffee shop here.
Well, this is going to be a fantastic project. I want everybody in Puerto Vallarta to get involved. If you're one of the lucky companies to contact them and get your tiles up there. Now, they're different shapes also, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be some ovals, some squares, some...
all kinds of shapes.
Diamonds.
And diamonds. We can do any type of shape. And yes, there's many ways to participate. So please, please, email us. If you go into the webpage, you can find the email. And we're going to be at the plaza every day. So please feel free to stop by.
And I know you work during bad weather, cold weather, hot weather, snow, whatever, because when I saw you doing the letters, when I know your history from before, once you start a project, you go, and Mother Nature, let's hopefully in a week or two it'll stop raining a little bit.
Yeah, and, but that won't keep us from
That won't keep you, because I know you're very, very dedicated and you work very hard. I have one other question. Who is doing the tile? You said each tile that a company orders or personal orders is custom made. Who is doing that? Are you all doing that also?
We have it made in this company.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they just come with a design, some kind of thing like a picture or...
pictures, only pet pictures, because then, like, some people want us to draw their grandma, and really, if we get a wrinkle wrong, it looks like a completely other person, so we don't even go there.
So mainly just script, words, whatever, like...
Yeah, or like, I don't know, a bird, or a heart, or just something creative,
but mainly words, like, you know, grandma was here, or something like that.
Also, what we're asking people is to leave, like, a message, or maybe a quote, or something... Because we believe in all, you know, the energy of all the words and the vibration and all that. So
it's like on my tombstone. When I die, it's going to have a great big thing that says, I told you I was sick. Well, again, I want to say thank you very much for taking your time to come on the Good Morning Wake Up Show.
Thank you for having us.
I want to have you come back here in maybe a month or two, maybe 2 months, to talk about the progress, to make sure that everything got sold, that you have enough tiles, that you get enough apples and waters, and anything else you need, just let me know if I can help you in any way.
Thank you.
Again, thank you, Nat. Thank you, Daniel, for coming, taking time, explain the project a little bit, and I encourage everybody to get involved any way you can. And it's going to be beautiful. I can't wait from a year from now when the thing is finished.
Yeah, I can't wait either.
To stand there and have this a picture taken with you all. And saying, hey, here it is.
Yeah. I can't wait either.
I'm excited. I'm pumped for this. This is cool. Well, we got to take another break. I want to say thank you very much for listening to the Good Morning Wake Up Show. Again, Natty, Daniel, thank you very much for taking your time, and we'll see you down the line.
Michael, thank you for having us.
Muchas gracias.
We'll be right back.
Serial Funk.
Well, I hope you're enjoying the show today. I had a couple of fun interviews, and we have one coming up here in a moment. Dr. Sutherland and Dr. Crystal are two PhDs from the University of Los Angeles. Well, UCLA. University of California in Los Angeles. They were here on campus this last week, and they gave a really, really nice lecture on a topic that's pretty serious, but yet it's the reason I wanted to play the lecture or part of it is because we have some great, 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 very distinguished lecturers that come here to this university. And they talk on a very large variety of topics from time to time. And I'm always trying to get the English-speaking community and the bilingual community involved here at the university. That's the main topic or the main reason for the show is to try and get the English-speaking and the bilingual communication or community involved in the campus. And by having distinguished doctors and other folks here at the campus doing lectures, seminars, it's just a great opportunity to come and learn. Sometimes they're not exactly what you might be interested in, but when you get there and start listening, you learn something completely new. So I wanted to say, once again, I appreciated the time that Dr. Crystal and Dr. Sutherland gave to me the other day right before their seminar, and hope you enjoy it. But again, it's just a little taste of what we have here at the university. When there are guest lectures, we'd love to have you come. They're always free. They're always open to the public, and we have them in nice air-conditioned areas. And after the lectures, there's question and answering seminars. And so anyway, it's a lot of fun. Please go to the website, and you can find out everything going on here at the campus. The website for the campus is www.cuc.udg.mx. Again, www.cuc.udg.mx. And also, if you'd like, you could read my article every week in the VArta Tribune. I try and advise people what we have done at the campus and what's going to be going on the next week or two in advance so you can kind of make plan. And speaking of that, as you all know, every Wednesday and Friday we have full featured movies here in our main auditorium at 1 o'clock. It's air-conditioning and open to the public. They're always free. This Wednesday, we have the 13th, The Kings of Leon. And it's a great, great rock music group that we have about an hour and 20-minute concert that they performed about 2 years ago. So The Kings of Leon are here on the 13th. And then on the 15th, there's a movie called 237, and it's about a time period that something happens at a school. It's an Australian film in 2006, and at 2:37 in the afternoon, something happens I'm not going to keep you in suspense. I'm not going to tell you what happened. But anyway, you need to come watch the movie. It's Friday the 15th at 2:37. Okay, we're going to go to the other interview right now. Hope you're enjoying the show, and we'll be back here in just a little bit. Thank you. Hey, everyone, to the Good Morning Wake Up Show with your host, Michael Nolan, here on University of Guadalajara Radio 104.3. This morning, we are very lucky to have two guest visitors from the University of Los Angeles, University of California, Los Angeles, better known as UCLA. And first of all, they're here on campus this week to put a lecture on entitled Captive and Missing Women in the Desert. First of all, I'd like to introduce Dr. Romy Sutherland.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And Dr. Efron Crystal.
Hello, how are you doing?
Did I pronounce that correct?
Perfectly.
Okay. And as I mentioned, they're both from the University of California in Los Angeles. They're here on campus this week and have been in Guadalajara giving a lecture. And I want to say thank you very much for coming to the campus. If you don't mind, Dr. Sutherland, if you'd please give a short bio of yourself. I know you're from Australia, mm-hmm. and you major, in film and literature. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's right.
I'll let you do the talking if you don't mind.
Sure, right. Yes, I studied literature initially, including Spanish literature, what we call, actually in the U.S., comparative literature, so studying literatures in a few different languages and having a comparative perspective. And then I specialized in film. And now I teach film in the Department of Comparative Literature at UCLA.
Okay. Dr. Crystal?
And I was an undergraduate at UC Berkeley in comparative literature.
And that was back in the 80s?
That was actually, yeah, I graduated in 1980.
You look very young, I mean, both of you, to be... That was back right after UCL, or Berkeley was really kind of got in the history book as being Berkeley, the laid-back place we knew in the 60s.
Yeah, I lived the tail end of that, you know, when there was still People's Park and when there were demonstrations against South Africa. So I actually lived the very tail end of that moment. And then I studied philosophy in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a PhD at Stanford. And my specialty is comparative literature. I'm very interested in the relationship or the comparative study of North and South American literatures. I'm also interested, you know, in some philosophical topics, the relation between literature and philosophy. But what brought us here today is more the study, the comparative study of North and South American literature.
The title of your speech today or your lecture series is Captive and Missing Women in the Desert. That can be pretty vague. Can you please explain a little bit more in detail what that all involves?
Yeah, let me give you a
little history behind it first.
A little history behind it.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, both in terms of how Romy and I came to the idea of giving this presentation and also the general topic. Because what's interesting is that both of us were work on different topics. And then we noticed that there began to be a bit of an overlap in our research. Romy was studying Australian cinema. I was studying the comparative study of North and South American literature. And, you know, I began to notice that there were a number of themes in North and South American literature that are shared.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most important themes that are shared between the literature of the United States and the literature of Argentina is the topic of the captive woman in the desert. You know, there were 400 and more captivity narratives published in the U.S. You know, from the 16th century until the beginning of the 19th century with The Last of the Mohicans. It was the most important genre in the U.S. The Americans were captivated at first by stories, chronicles of women who either were or claimed to have been captured by indigenous people, and then that developed into a full-fledged literary genre.
Mm-hmm.
It was hugely important to the U.S. And one of the reasons why this was so important is because the story of a captive woman in the wilderness, in a sense, represented the whole American colonial project. The idea that the woman... The ordeals of the woman in these stories, people felt were analogous to the ordeal of what it means to come to the New World and try to establish something new. But then I noticed as well that in the early 19th century, something happens around the 1830s in Argentina where this kind of story is just as important. And the birth of Argentine literature is a poem called The Captive Woman in the Desert. There was
okay.
no word for wilderness in Spanish. And in Argentina, it remains the most important literary topic from the 19th century until the present. You know, and then Romy was studying... Romy is a specialist, a very important specialist, in the cinema of Peter Weir, the great Australian author. And then in her research, independently of mine, she was studying a comparable phenomenon but in Australia.
Yeah, my starting point was working on the entire opera of Peter Weir, and then I started focusing on Picnic at Hanging Rock, which was the film that really put him on the map in 1975. And interestingly, it was only on really unpacking that film that I realized it actually has many, many traits of classic captivity narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, that had not been acknowledged at all. And interestingly, in Australia, in fact, it's really not very widely recognised that in the 19th century, for several decades, one of the most popular genres of literature was actually captivity tales. And what's particularly interesting in the case of Australia is that there was a reason in the United States why there was a whole literary genre of captivity tales, because there was an historical reality of several, many, in fact hundreds of white people being taken captive by indigenous peoples. So mm-hmm. there was the historical reality that then became a whole literary genre which had its own sort of repetitive motifs. In Australia, that literary genre from the US was very popular, but the historical reality was dramatically different from the US. There's not one single recorded case of any white person having been taken captive by any indigenous person in Australia. And that's simply because culturally, Aboriginal cultures are very different, and geographically, mm-hmm. the continent is dramatically different. The last thing that any nomadic Aboriginal communities wanted would be like a gringo, let's say, let alone a gringa, like a white woman in a flowing white dress, as we see images in this film, that they would have to actually sustain, because it's such a harsh and arid continent that they, as nomadic people, had to keep down their populations. So they would have absolutely no incentive to take anybody captive, let alone somebody who couldn't survive a day in mm-hmm. those harsh conditions. So despite the fact that the historical reality was dramatically different from the US, nevertheless, those captivity tales were very popular.
The American ones.
The American captivity tales were very popular, and actually generated then a whole genre of Australian captivity tales and disappearance tales. And I argue that that's because they actually gave expression to very real colonial anxieties, mm-hmm. a colonial experience that was actually quite informed and even mediated to some degree from the knowledge of the North American colonial experience that had preceded the Australian one. And so what's interesting to me is why then in the mid-1970s, when Picnic at Hanging Rock is made, why then a film would be made at that juncture that actually echoes many of the motifs of these captivity tales, even though it is ostensibly very much a post-colonial film critiquing that colonial heritage. And in some degrees it does very much have those post-colonial elements to mm-hmm. the film. But what hadn't been acknowledged is that within the film there are also all sorts of colonial elements that remain. And I argue that that's because in the 70s, when social change was happening and there was a lot of acknowledgement of the reality of Indigenous culture and the treatment of Indigenous peoples in the colonial period, a lot of these issues were actually of interest to people again. And interestingly, a lot of the sort of anxieties around that colonial experience were sort of resurfacing in this moment in the 70s, when that period was being reassessed now from a post-colonial perspective. So reassessed from a perspective in which people were acknowledging that what had happened wasn't entirely kosher.
Well, that's, you know, if you go back in history, in the United States, you had the Native Americans, and then you had the Europeans coming over in the 1600s, 1700s, and, of course, that was mainly, there were Europeans from other countries, but England was mainly the United Kingdom, was the country that came over, and where the Revolutionary was fought, the war. And it, so you have a very, very close tie for many, many years between the United States and England, or Great Britain. Also, Great Britain was actually Australia, was under the crown for many, many years. And so the history is there, and that's kind of how you can almost make a connection between the United States, England, and Australia. Yeah. We were talking about indigenous people kidnapping or capturing white people or European. Mm-hmm. You know, also, it's being a Native American, we were growing up with just the opposite story. There's always two sides to every story. Pocahontas and John Smith.
Right.
They were apparently married. And that's just the opposite to where he came as a European man, mm-hmm. took a Native American woman, mm-hmm. and I think actually took her back to Europe, and she almost became great prominence there in Europe. So it's kind of, there's two sides to every coin.
And also there's this story of what actually happened and how people remember it.
People remember it completely different.
And how people then tell stories about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a fascinating case that Romy has studied, which is the Elijah Frazier. I mean, it would be fascinating for you to say something about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't mind, Romy, right before we do it, we're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we're going to do that, and we'll be right back with just a minute with more of the Good Morning Wake Up Show.
You are listening to the Good Morning Wake Up Show.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Good Morning Wake Up Show. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Crystal and Dr.
Sutherland.
I'm sorry, Romy Sutherland. She was just about ready to tell us a story and a comparison between facts that she has discovered and revealed through her education and her studies. If you don't mind, Dr. Sutherland?
Yes, of course. We were just talking about, you know, the fascinating difference between what actually happens historically and then the stories we choose to, and in some cases seem to need to tell about the historical reality and how that reality morphs often quite significantly. There's one particular case in Australia of a woman who was shipwrecked, Eliza Frazier, and actually rescued by Aborigines in the 19th century. And it's a fascinating case of this story morphing. Basically, what happened is that she was rescued by Aborigines and lived with them for some time. When she actually eventually returned to white colonial society, she actually found that there was enormous interest in a story that actually was somewhat more dramatic than what had actually happened, which was one in which she was actually taken captive. Mm. She was kidnapped and held by this Aboriginal community. And in the telling of it, particularly when she was actually back in London, there were actually images that would accompany her oral telling of it that were images of Native Americans, of Africans, of Polynesians, that would ostensibly, you know, accompany her narrative of Aborigines. And it's just indicative of the fact that basically people who are familiar with a certain story want to hear a version of that again. Mm-hmm. And so her audience was familiar with stories of colonial stories from various parts of the world, and they were so ready to just fit her experiences into what they were already familiar with that's actually what happened, and the reality actually just sort of disappeared in the telling altogether. And then it took quite a bit of work on behalf of several historians to actually unearth what really had happened to this woman beneath all these layers of the versions that had evolved.
So what's fascinating is that, you know, the story that was originally a story of rescue, the Aboriginal people had actually rescued, saved her, fed her, and so on, was transformed into a story of captivity. You know,
and kidnapping
activity, which was definitely not the case. Something analogous in Argentina is very fascinating. In the 1830s, Argentina decided to expel its indigenous populations from the country. And the justification that they gave was that there were captive women that were captured by the indigenous people.
Mm.
And then they had raids in indigenous communities. And then they ostensibly rescued captives, but the people they were rescuing were indigenous women. You know, so the reality was that they were actually capturing indigenous women, mm-hmm, to become servants in Argentina, but they called them white captives. So the reality was one, and then the stories that are told are very different.
Well, in your lecture, you're talking about Australia, Argentina, and the United States. Our listening audience is mainly Canadian and American from the United States. Can you expound a little bit on how this all ties into people in the United States?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this notion, you know, that the notion that that a woman captive, or the story of a woman being taken captive in the indigenous world is seen as a kind of a test. One of the very interesting issues here is that in these American stories, there was in the earlier ones, there was a fear of miscegenation. mm-hmm. a fear that there may be a sexual contact between the white women and indigenous men. That was an enormous fear, which drives as well the plots of these stories. I mean, in one of the most famous American stories, the captivity tale of Mary Rowlandson, the whole reason for writing the book when she returns from captivity is to prove to the world that she remained chaste in this ordeal. So for a long time it was even a racist issue.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest American films of the 20th century is The Searchers by John Ford. And this is a film that also retells the captivity story. And in this story you have, you know, John Wayne, who is searching for this captive woman. And his intention at the beginning of the film, when he begins to search for her, a woman taken captive, is to kill her.
Mm.
Because he thinks that she has had, and she has, had relationships with indigenous men in her captivity. One of the most extraordinary moments of the film, it's its ending. When you think that John Wayne is chasing after her, it's Natalie Wood playing the captive woman, you think he's about to capture and kill her. And all of a sudden, he changes his mind. And he says, "Let's go home, Debbie." This film also marks the beginning of the civil rights moment in the United States. So it's a way in which, through film, through a great Western, a mm-hmm. masterpiece of American cinema, John Ford is reconciling himself with a tradition and moving it forward in a more positive direction.
It's also a fascinating example of telling a story that is ostensibly the story of the 19th century in America, and on some level it is, but really it has much more to do with the time in which the film was made than the period that it's actually presenting. It was really about this 20th century stage in America of the civil rights movement, as Efrain says, so onto this 19th century context.
Well, when you study American history, now this is part of my geological or background.
Wonderful.
My great-great-grandfather came here from Ireland.
Yeah.
And my great-great-grandmother and her family were Native Americans.
Yeah.
And in the 1800s, President Andrew Jackson bought all the land in southern eastern United States and moved everything called the Louisiana Purchase. They moved all the Native Americans from Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, mm-hmm. all to Oklahoma, put them on reservations. Somehow my great-great-great-grandfather ended up in Oklahoma, and he was just working and living. He came from Nolensville, Tennessee, which is south of Nashville. But in about 1884, he met a Indian woman mm-hmm. named Lucy Savage. Well, Lucy was forced by the United States government to live on the reservation unless she could marry a white person or a black person. And they called them freemen. So she married my great-great-grandfather. His name was General Lee Nolan, just so she could get off the reservations and hope for a better life. So, but somebody that saw that from the outside could take that as he took her, a white man taking a Native American woman, right. as a slave. And so you can see both sides of the story, but she wanted to be off the reservation. She knew that a free person mm-hmm. could sign her paperwork to the government and make her free and not more or less a captive of not another person, but of a government.
That's right.
Because the Native Americans were forced to live on the reservations. So there's a lot of history and a lot of stories. And as you mentioned, and in your lecture, you try and point out the truth
yes.
that we're searching for in Australia,
that's right.
Argentina, the United States.
I mean, what's interesting is what is based in fact, what is based in fiction, you know, and how, depending on one's points of view and different historical moments, how the story is told. It's just as interesting. It's just as interesting as unearthing the truth. Unearthing the truth is important,
mm-hmm.
but also taking stock of how people remember what took place, how people tell stories about how things took place, and how sometimes the stories that are told will then influence the memory in a different direction as well.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap this up pretty quick. We're going to take a short break, and if you don't mind, we'll come right back and just give you a couple of minutes to summarize the lecture series and give out maybe some information where people that couldn't come and listen to you live can go online, and or a book that you have or a film that
they can look at to find out more about this topic, this information.
Wonderful.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Let's have a little talk at the Good Morning Wake Up Show.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Good Morning Wake Up Show. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Sutherland and Dr. Crystal. As I mentioned, they're here on campus giving lecture series today about captive women. And if you don't mind, could you please give out some information to where people that weren't fortunate enough to be able to come and hear your lecture can go and find out more about this subject and also a little bit more about yourselves and your works and your studies?
Yeah, I'd just quickly say that I think a great starting point would be to see the film by Peter Weir, Picnic at Hanging Rock, from 1975. And while seeing it, just to be aware of the colonial positioning and the post-colonial positioning, that basically the way I think the film is, on the one hand, presenting a critical post-colonial perspective of this English presence in Australia, but just be attentive to the way in which there's also an attachment to those 19th century colonial attitudes.
And for me, for the US, I would recommend three works. One is The Tale of Captivity and Redemption by Mary Rowlandson, which is the most fascinating captivity story, autobiographical story, you know, of the 17th century in the U.S. Then I would recommend to reread The Last of the Mohicans by Fenimore Cooper and realize how central the captivity tale is to this wonderful American novel. And then I would recommend viewing The Searchers by John Wayne and realizing the significance of captivity in that story and how wonderfully well Ford treats that to dialogue with our times.
Well, luckily, with the information that you have provided and the insight, when people watch these movies or read these books, we'll be able to look at it with an open mind, a completely different perspective than we would have gone into the project with before. So I want to say thank you for that. I want to say thank you for your time here on campus. Thank you for the opportunity to us come and listen to you and giving us the information. Anything else you'd like to say in closing about your project?
Just thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you, and just what a pleasure it is to be in this delightful town of Puerto Vallarta and at this really wonderfully appealing university. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, and we're both very much looking forward to dialoguing with the students and faculty and other guests at the lecture, you know, this afternoon.
Well, once again, I want to say thank you very much. Look forward to listening to your lecture later on today. And we appreciate it. You're both welcome anytime you'd ever come back to Puerto Vallarta through the university or just for vacation. We'd love to have you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of the Good Morning Wake Up Show here in just a moment. We'll be right back.
go now? Where do we go now? Where do we go?
We got it.
Well, once again, I'd like to thank everyone that was on the show today, Natasha and David, who are working on the huge, huge mural project that's going to be doing down at the plaza in Old Town. Also, Rebecca Sanchez for coming in and, or Santiago, I'm sorry, Rebecca Santiago coming in and informing us a little bit about the true meaning of Independence Day that they're going to be having on the night of the 15th and the day of the 16th here in Mexico. Be a lot of celebrations going on, and so go out there and just have a lot of fun and celebrate and enjoy yourself. And, of course, Dr. Crystal and Dr. Sutherland for coming here and giving me a little bit of their time before their seminar. Just played the song Forever Young by Rod Stewart. And speaking about being forever young, as everybody knows, the school semester started about 3 weeks ago, but the SWAM program started last week. And if you're not familiar with the SWAM program, it is about 30 different types of classes that we have here at the university for anyone over 60 years old or about 60 years old and above. It's free education. As I mentioned, about 30 different classes. Ranges everything from English, art, jewelry making, dancing, yoga, jewelry making. I think I said that twice. Different kinds of jewelry. Guitar lessons, history of the Bay of Banderas, computers. And coming up here in a couple of weeks when it gets a little bit busier and the snowbirds start coming down, we'll start Spanish classes. So there's all types of things. There's still a few of the classes that you can sign up and enroll in, but we have record numbers this semester. Over 300 senior citizens have enrolled in the classes or are coming to campus. Some of them are just 2 hours a week. Some are 3 or 4 hours a day, 4 days a week. They have chosen to come and kind of make this a new community center for the senior citizens here in Puerto Vallarta. And they're learning so much and enjoying themselves so much that I want to say thank you once again to Erandi Cruz, who's director of the SWAM program, and, of course, the rector or president of the university, Marco Antonio Cortez Gradado, for making it all possible. There are many, many instructors and volunteers that come and volunteer their time and put in endless hours, not just teaching the classes, but preparing the coursework for these SWAM students. And I'll tell you what, it is so fun to come and watch on campus the young students that are 19, 20, 18, 20, 22, 23, intermingle with the older students. I was talking to a young couple the other day, two young girls, and they said, "See that man, woman? That's our grandparents." Cool. The kids are learning. The grandparents are learning. It's a family-type deal. They're all coming to the same university. And I kind of think the grandparents are having more fun and enjoying things again because they're forever young. Speaking about being forever young, the 12th of September would have been my mom's 97th birthday. She passed on many years ago, but I want to say happy birthday to her. And I can't believe it, but in November, on November 1st, my dad would have been 100 years old. So anyway, I'll say happy birthday to him on the 1st. Hey, I want to mention the Brigade, or Brigade. It's going on right now over behind the Micro Plaza there at the main mall right there, about a block and a half to the south towards the mountain. They have doctors, lawyers, medical people, nurses, physicalologists, people for physical fitness, architects, construction people, so, and about 40 or 50 different students that are there to try and help guide you around and this, that, and the other. So if you're over in that area around Micro Plaza Mall, where the, what I call the third Walmart is, go over there today and enjoy the time. I think they have some refreshments, and it's just a lot of fun, and you'll learn a lot more about the University of Guadalajara here in Puerto Vallarta. And it is going on till 2 o'clock. So don't forget also that this Wednesday we're going to have a concert film with starring the Kings of Leon. And then on Friday we're going to have the film 237. That's a time in the afternoon where something very exciting happens at a school. So anyway, it's an Australian film, 2006. They're always free. They're always open to the public in a beautiful, beautiful air conditioning auditorium. So be sure to come and enjoy those on campus. Also, if you want to contact me, if you're an interesting guest, if you're a VIP, very interesting person, want to come and talk about your story, if you're a charity, if you're an organization, if you're someone that wants to get your word out, like Natalia did today, talking about her Tal project, her and David, please contact me at the show, and we'll hook up, and we'll have you on as a guest. The best way to do that is email me at 104.3wakeupshow@gmail.com. Again, 104.3wakeupshow@gmail.com. I want to say thank you very much for listening in this morning. We'll be back next Saturday morning with some more exciting interviews, music, and just a little bit about whatever I want to talk about. Again, thank you for listening in. We'll see you next Saturday.
FM University Radio Network has brought you the Good Morning Wake Up Show. Be sure to tune in and listen next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. Hasta la vista.